Your old or broken phone can let you down. But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence with a new line on MyPlan and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. After all, you don't want your old phone to die on you when you're lost.
Perfect.
Or for your broken phone to glitch at the worst possible time.
Hey, can I get your number?
Oh. Trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
That's why I told my kid, stop licking all the lead. Anyway, Daniel, good to see you. My name is Dan Selke. You are Daniel Roman. We are here with a new episode of Take the Black, the only show on the internet. We talk about all things sci-fi, fantasy movies, TV books, et cetera, and so forth. I'm here with you. You're here with me. We're here with all of our audience members. I'm going to sneeze. Daniel, say something.
Oh, man. Well, bless you, first of all. And hello and welcome, everyone, to another episode of Take the Black. I'm excited to be here. We've got some cool stuff to talk about today, as we always do when we do this show live at 2 p.m. Central, 3 p.m. Eastern on YouTube, Facebook, and all the other places. And you can also listen to us on Spotify and all those things. Like and subscribe and come hang out because we're excited to have you here. Dan, how are you doing today?
I'm good. The sneeze was a false alarm.
Oh, well, good. Take that, foul sneeze. Ye be not welcome here. What do you want to talk about?
Well, why don't we start our discussion in Westeros, which we often do. There is some hot goss going around the Seven Kingdoms. Daniel, what's happening in the world of games, thrones, houses, dragons, knights, kingdoms, sevens, and so forth?
Yeah, so we always start in Westeros, as listeners know, but we have, it's going to be a sizable chunk of the show today because there's a lot going on. Things are happening in the Seven Kingdoms. So probably the biggest, most exciting, yet most nebulous thing we have to talk about today is that the HBO exec Francesca teased last week about other spinoffs in the works, and particularly said one of them's looking pretty promising. So she said we have other spinoffs that we're working on right now, one of which I won't get into, is very promising, and it is still the Targaryen line. There's a number of other spinoffs. We can't really guarantee what's going to go forward, but we are very big budget on the other ones. And the big budget comment was specifically because Orsi was talking about A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, which is lower budget than the other ones. It's a smaller, more contained story. It doesn't have dragons flying around. But there's apparently another Targaryen spinoff that will be pretty big and bombastic. Dan, you have a pretty strong thought about what this is, right?
Oh, I know what it is. We all know what it is. I mean, yeah. I feel like she's being a little coy, but I think it's been pretty common knowledge that they're working on a show about Aegon the Conqueror, the guy who, with his sisters, conquered the Seven Kingdoms about 300 years before Game of Thrones. We've heard about that. Like, we know Matt Tomlinson is working on it. George R. R. Martin's working on it. It just makes sense. The plan seems to be to wrap up House of the Dragon and then move on to another show about blonde dragon riding sword wielding people. I would bet all the money I have, all $8, on that being the show she's talking about.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. Like you said, it's been pretty common knowledge. It's been talked about a lot. We know there's a writer working on it. He's been fairly, open. He's talked about it a few times that he's working on this Aegon the Conqueror project. And if I remember right, it came out a little while ago that this was not just a television show, but a television show with potentially a movie component, which I don't know if that means all on television, like a TV movie, or if they're gonna home box office is gonna say, psych, we would like you to go to the actual box office. We don't have those details yet, obviously, but suffice to say that would be pretty big budget if they do anything remotely like that with a movie component and a show component. And I think it would, you know, if there's any bit of Song of Ice and Fire lore that probably warrants that treatment, it's probably Aegon's Conquest. Like, I don't know if they do a movie for the Doom of Valyria and then lead into Aegon or what, how they do it, but I support it.
There's ways to do it. I don't want to water things down too much. I feel like the whole Game of Thrones franchise thing is losing a bit of its luster these days. It's been, you know, 5 years since the end of the show. House of the Dragon is doing good, but has some issues. I'm looking forward to the Seven Kingdoms and seeing if that can jumpstart anything.
Yeah. I wonder if that's franchises in general. This is a little off topic.
It is, but yeah.
It makes me think of, you wrote a great editorial that's up on the site, winteriscoming.net, about Marvel and like, are people ready to start giving superheroes their money again? Because it seems like Marvel, you know, people are just getting kind of tired. Like, the new Captain America movie's out. It's probably one of the only times I haven't rushed straight to the theater, even though I loved Anthony Mackie in The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I've been looking forward to this movie, and I kind of could care less, because this is like the 35th Marvel movie. So maybe it's franchises in general losing their luster.
It did do pretty well, though. I was surprised it did as well as it did. It made back all of its budget in like the first weekend. Good. I mean, it may be the days of them raking in $1 billion, but yes, the enthusiasm level is a little bit lower. They're also making them for less, and I haven't seen it either. I've heard a bunch of conflicting things about, is it good, is it bad? I don't know. I think the question is, do people really care deeply anymore?
Yeah, and it is. I feel like if people don't care, it is really indicative of like just the mismanagement of the overall thing, because I know that certainly it seemed like people cared a lot more about what would be next for Anthony Mackie's Captain America after The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. But that was like 15 Marvel projects ago. You know, they've left such a long gap that I feel like enthusiasm really waned.
What year was that? Was that like 2021? Was that like mid-pandemic?
It was 2021. Yeah, it was their second Disney Plus series. So after WandaVision,
a while ago. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, we've talked, and when I say we, I mean like we, you and I, and we as a people,
yeah, the royal
about
we.
The monoculture. Like, can there be another movie event, TV event? I'll even throw video games or books in there. That can like unite people in the way that Game of Thrones did, that Harry Potter did back in the day, that Marvel did, like these big monocultural behemoths.
Yeah. I think Stranger Things is close.
That's true. That's true.
It's probably the closest one we've got at the moment.
Yeah. You know what? Why am I being so pessimistic? There are other things that are out there.
So let me ask you, since we were talking about how uninterested and jaded we are, are there other Targaryen spinoffs you'd like to see? I just thought that'd be a fun question to think about.
GTA 5 says Leo. True. GTA 5 unites everybody. I think the most obvious one is Aegon's Conquest. That just makes the most sense. What they got basically is House of the Dragon. That was a good choice. Knight of the Seven Kingdoms is a good choice. Aegon's Conquest is a good choice. The Blackfyre Rebellion would be pretty cool. So I'm Pitchman, and you're HBO executive Francisco Orsi.
Sweet.
What if they get to the end of A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, the end of like the published material, 3 seasons in, and then they kind of make up new material that is basically the Blackfyre Rebellions, whichever one is going on around the time, and just kind of roll that in.
Well, so here's the thing with that. So the Blackfyre Rebellion happens before Duncan Egg, and it's basically it sets up the state of Westeros for Duncan Egg. Like, Duncan Egg talks about the Blackfyre Rebellion a lot. Mm-hmm. The Sworn Sword is all about someone who bet on the wrong side in the Blackfyre Rebellion, a lord who bet on the wrong side and had it basically rob them of all their, and I use rob them, they lost everything because they bet on the wrong person in that battle. So if they did that, it would be a prequel to Duncan Egg, because the quote unquote second Blackfyre Rebellion. I wish I remembered the line. It's something like it ended with a whimper or something like that. It will be in A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. The second Blackfyre Rebellion is a small, pitiful affair, if I remember right. And it happens in The Mystery Knight, which is the third Duncan Egg book. So
aren't there third, fourth, and fifth rebellions?
I think it's just the two. I think it's the one.
Wait, really?
I think it's the one Blackfyre Rebellion, which happened because Aegon the Unworthy legitimized all his bastards, if I remember right. And gave one of them, I believe, the sword. I don't want to say Blackfyre, I think. So, that happens before Duncan Egg. And then the second one is basically in the Mystery Knight. So I do think it's one of those interesting things, kind of like House of the Dragon, where if they wanted to do a Blackfyre Rebellion one, it makes sense in terms of the drama of it all. It's one of the most interesting periods of Targaryen history, but it would be like they did a show and then they were like, now let's do the prequel to our prequel to Game of Thrones. Similar to like House of the Dragon, if they went back to do Aegon, it'd be, we did this thing about the fall of House Targaryen, like the end of their height. Now let's go back to the beginning for the prequeliest of prequels.
Daniel, I hate to check you and correct
me.
You.
But hit me with it.
While you were talking and while I was absorbing it, I did some Googling and I found out about the third Blackfyre Rebellion, the fourth Blackfyre Rebellion, and the fifth Blackfyre Rebellion, sometimes known as the War of the Nine Penny Kings.
So they do go on. So that would be interesting as, like, I guess an anthology series. And this is one of those things where Martin hasn't, he's referenced these things. Sure. You know, it's in A World of Ice and Fire, he references them, but he hasn't written Blood and Fire yet, which is the sequel to Fire and Blood that would cover all of these Blackfyre Rebellions. So HBO would be an interesting territory. But yes, thank you for checking me about the War of the Nine Penny Kings. I appreciate it.
Your old or broken phone can let you down, but at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence with a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. After all, you don't want your old phone to die on you when you're lost.
Perfect.
Or for your broken phone to glitch at the worst possible time.
Hey, can I get your number?
Oh. Trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger. And future stronger you can get started now by saving $28 or more when you join today. You in? We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need to keep stepping it up. And free fitness training to help you mix up your routine. Plus, most clubs are open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends February 28th. See home club for details.
And I always figured that because A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, like Duncan Egg, they grow up and he becomes the, you know, spoiler, king, and Dunk becomes his Lord Commander of the Kingsguard. They go through that. Like, they are involved in all this stuff.
Yes.
I don't think it'll happen, but I don't know. I have this vision of what if A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms ended up being this season that lasted so long, and each season they grow up a little bit, and by the end he's king and he's that guy, and then it ends with Summerhall, and it's a whole thing.
I mean, that would be amazing. And so this is a nice segue into one of our next Westeros updates to talk about, which is that Francesca Orsi revealed that HBO, they haven't officially greenlit it, but they are planning for three seasons of A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, which of course is the next Game of Thrones spinoff, Duncan Egg, that's coming out in July, August. I can't remember if we have an official release.
We don't know.
Later this year. Yeah. So Orsi said, we're already planning on how do we build this for the three seasons in total. We're not picking it up officially, but it's looking very good. We're looking at it as a holistic piece, seasons two and three, because there's three novellas, which is smart to me. Without getting into spoilers, the third novella kind of ends on the note of Egg growing up just a tiny bit. Kind of like growing into his own as a young person a little bit, in a way that, you know, obviously Martin wanted to write many more of these novellas, but it's a decent endpoint to imagine, you know, thinking of like Duncan Egg is really about Dunk mentoring his young squire, and that is sure. a huge turning point moment for them in their relationship. But if they did go farther, obviously dealing with all of those small subsequent little sad Blackfyre rebellions, because it's really like the big one happens before Duncan Egg. But them dealing with the fallout, and like you said, Summerhall is a hugely important moment in the lore that Martin hasn't written a lot about. We haven't seen a lot about it. It's why Aerys Targaryen is so kind of goes mad, if I remember right, because he's like a relative. I can't remember if he's a son of Egg or like a one generation down, but obviously the knowledge of what happened there is scarring to the Targaryen family that survives. So yeah, I mean, I would be all in on that, but HBO, they would really have to go off book to be able to pull something like that off. That's my only reservation.
Oh yeah. But, I mean, there's no chance of them having a book. So why not?
Yeah, that's true.
It's a good idea that they're going to do them back to back, though. That's a solid idea. And I think it'll be successful. And again, I love that it's cheaper. I love that it's going to be a more streamlined, smaller scale, intimate show. I think it's a good step in a good direction for everybody yeah. in this genre space.
Yeah, totally. I feel like I think we talked about this in one of our recent shows. Maybe I'm misremembering, about like the budgets ballooning and all of these streamers kind of rushing to make gigantic productions, and how at a certain point it becomes clear it's not just about the money to get these things off the ground. And I think A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms is getting ahead of that curve, because we know it is a smaller budget spinoff that is telling a more contained story. And yeah, it would be cool to see HBO, you know, lead the charge with that the same way they led the charge with Game of Thrones. So we will see. Yeah.
Leo, I think it'll probably be fall. It feels like a fall thing. I'm not sure why. Because it feels like it's almost done. They probably could release it after The Last of Us, but I think it'll probably be a little later than that.
Yeah, I mean, but The Last of Us and House of the Dragon are kind of HBO's two big genre releases this year, unless I'm forgetting one. So I could see them kind of, you know, one in the spring, one in maybe the early fall. Like, I keep thinking of August or early September, maybe, for A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. But we shall see. The other smaller spinoff news to mention is that House of the Dragon season 3 has a new tagline. Dan, I think you know a little bit more about this. What's the deal with this?
I mean, it was just on the Twitter. They replaced whatever they had before with, was it like nothing burns like betrayal? That's cute.
True. Is it true? Hot Ones needs to know.
I would say there's a 65% chance of it being true. Not much to say there. I mean, well, most of the tech from it is that they're ramping up. We know they're going to start filming next month. We know the actors are getting their scripts. We know everything is ramping up. I'm looking forward to covering it. I'm looking forward to there being life again.
Yeah. And
personally, I don't know. Nothing burns like betrayal. I don't think it sounds quite right in my ear as a catchy tagline. So, not my personal favorite, but I support their right to experiment as they enter this curious age.
Yeah, it's early days. They can always change their mind. It's not on a poster yet. Hello there, Bubo Bubo in the chat. Nice to see you too. We'll see if that sticks. I don't love it. I don't hate it. I think, for the love of God, we need to start having some more betrayals in that show, because they've tried to make everyone a little too sympathetic. Give us some more ruthless, awful stuff.
Come on.
Let us love to hate these characters. It is the time. If they are going to do it, season 3 is the time to really go in on letting us hate some of these characters, because this is the point in the story where things get ugly. Yeah, so we'll see. Do you have anything else you want to say about House of the Dragon or any of the Game of Thrones television universe before we move on to a few bookish Game of Thrones things?
Just that I haven't read Night of the Seven Kingdoms yet. I can now. I keep looking at it. I'm waiting for it to call to me. I know that when the time is right, it'll just be perfect and I'll pick it up and I'll read it. Probably won't take very long.
One sitting.
It just, it hasn't been the quite the right time yet, but it will be soon. I swear.
I bet when that trailer comes out, you're gonna
get, I want to do it before if I can.
Okay.
We'll see.
Yeah, that's a one sitting read, really, or maybe two. You know, they're not long. They're like 100
speed readers like you, Dan.
It's not about speed reading. It's just about setting aside the time. But speaking of reading and things you cannot read speedily, here's another fun little A Song of Ice and Fire announcement that I think dropped today, even, which is that A Feast for Crows is getting, that's the fourth Song of Ice and Fire book, for listeners who don't know, which, how'd you end up here if you don't know that? It's getting a 20th anniversary edition coming out November 4th, 2025. And it is up there on the screen. If you're listening on audio, go watch on YouTube so you can see the pretty cover. Dan, I won't lie to you. This makes me feel pretty old. When did you read A Feast for Crows?
Oh, like after I started watching Game of Thrones.
Okay.
Because I hadn't heard of it before that. I watched like the first season of the TV show, and then I got into the books because there was nothing left. I was like, okay, so I watched the first two seasons. What happens next? So then I skipped the first two books, went right to A Storm of Swords, read that, and just kept going.
Yeah.
I don't know, okay. 2014.
Nice. Bubo, we do not have any previews of illustrations yet. They just revealed this cover, like, I think literally today or yesterday. Mm-hmm. Feast for Crows was when I got on the Song of Ice and Fire train. I started reading this series the year Feast for Crows came out. So 20 years ago.
Adventure Woo. For you.
Yeah, it really has been. And you know, it's funny because we've all been waiting so long for the Winds of Winter. It's easy to forget that there was an infamous delay for A Feast for Crows that was like 5 years that a lot of fans were very upset about. And then there was a similarly long delay for Dance with Dragons because Martin very famously split these two books. It was supposed to be one book. He split it into two. They are kind of concurrent entries. But yeah, seeing that it's 20 years from A Feast for Crows, whew, that puts it in perspective. Man, Martin was a much younger man in those days.
I'm sure it'll be cool. I mean, it's hard to hear 20th anniversary of Feast for Crows and not think. I feel like if people are still hanging on to this, they're probably reminded of how long it's taken to write The Winds of Winter. Julie says, first Winds of Winter, that'd be nice. In one way, it's a re-release of a 20-year-old book. In another way, it's a personal attack on me and a reminder of how long it's taken to get the next one out. I'm sure it'll be cool. November.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I feel that. So Bubo has an interesting comment here. I have A Feast for Crows from Folio. Folio Society does these very, very expensive, nice special editions. It's great, but it's unreadable, too heavy. And I will say, it's always interesting to me with special editions. Like, I don't personally own any of the 20th anniversary editions for the first three books. They're all very pretty. Like, I stop and ogle them every time I see them in the store. But like, do you think you're going to get this? Because it is one of those books. Yeah. Okay. Fair. There's so many different editions. And like, is this the definitive one? I have a lot of respect for the Folio ones because those are like, they're made for collectors. But yeah, I don't know. It's interesting to see something like this.
They're collector's items, right?
Like, yes.
My books, I like to, this is bad. Like, especially like, I can tell you when I read Land of Seven Kingdoms, I'm going to write in that thing. I'm going to fold down pages. I don't know. Like a collector's edition is supposed to be pristine. That's not how I treat the things I own. I muss up the things I own.
Yeah, totally. And like Bubo said, it's a great book to put it on the shelf and show to guests. Totally. That is totally what it feels like. Like every time I watch a booktuber and they have all of the Brandon Sanderson leather bounds, I'm like, those are beautiful. But I don't know that I'd rather read one of those than, you know, the normal editions from Tor. For Feast for Crows, I've still got this bad boy, which is my original copy of it from 2005.
That's, I love that.
I loved these covers. I was so sad when they discontinued them during when they released Dance with Dragons. They did different covers. But yeah, so Feast for Crows, 20th anniversary edition, coming November 4th. So there's another small bit of Game of Thrones news that is, it's not really Game of Thrones news, but it's a good excuse to talk about it, that I kind of wanted to ask your opinion about. So you wrote about this story today on the site. It's up that publishers have banded together to basically sue the state of Iowa over a law banning books like Game of Thrones from schools and public libraries. What is the deal with this, Dan?
I'm so glad you asked. I could refer very fastly. I think that we've all, it's true that there's been an uptick in book bans in the US over the past several years, kind of part of this rising cultural tide that also includes Trumpism, that also includes immigrant stuff, kind of an anti-intellectual wave we're going through right now. I think the state that's doing this, Iowa, the expansion to libraries is a new one.
Yeah.
That's kind of new.
Not school libraries, public libraries. Yeah.
Yeah. And they were talking about various laws that are in place for libraries already that require. So you either have to just like guess what's going to be objectionable and then just toss out everything, which includes books in some of these places like Game of Thrones, because there is violence and sex in them.
Yeah. It is on the list in this state. Yes. We're not just being anecdotal here.
No, we are not. And then there are other places where you can keep the books. We have to be like you have to have like an adults only section, or just make it an adult library, which is kind of silly, because some of these small town libraries, they're like a couple rooms big. And if you want to stay open and be an adults only library, like the whole point of a public library is that people go in there after school and like hang out and read and do all that stuff. So it's an attack on books and literacy and kind of this part of this rising conservative tide. And I'll go ahead and say it. I don't like it. I say let the books be available to people who want to read them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I am totally in that camp, too. And I wanted to talk about this a little bit today because it kind of fits together nicely with A Feast for Crows, we were just talking about, 20th anniversary. That, for me, is the year I started reading A Song of Ice and Fire, 2005. When my sister gave me a copy of Game of Thrones, because our World of Warcraft guildmates kept talking about Jon Snow and all the nothing he knew, and I wanted to know what was up.
That's cool.
So this hits close to home for me, because I read these books when I was like 16. Because my parents didn't have any sort of, you know, rules or regulations really about what I could read in terms of books. My dad was a bricklayer. He just thought it was amazing I was reading anything at all. So it is interesting and sad to think about, you know, like, how will that affect the children who might have picked up a book like a Game of Thrones as late teens or something, who now, like, they're banning this like till you're 18 or 19. Like, you need to show your ID to even take it out of the library. So in my opinion, it's nice to see like all of the big publishers. Listeners, watchers, you can go look at Dan's report on this on the site, but it is basically like all of the big four publishing houses in the US and then a few others, they're all banding together to sue over this, because it's like putting a crazy onus on like libraries and schools and stuff. But yeah, I just thought that would be interesting to talk about, because it's weird to see something like this where it's like, oh, that would be censoring, you know, what was essentially a formative, like, I'm here on this show with you, Dan. Like, we're talking about Game of Thrones. Probably wouldn't be the case if I hadn't read that book when I was like 16. And it's weird to think of kids having less rights today with that.
I mean, yeah, it's part of a strategy to, you know, kind of prohibit anything the powers and be think is at all harmful. The problem is you just kind of define what you don't like as harmful, and then it goes in the list. Like, if a book has a gay character, of any stripe, okay, gay is bad, so it goes, that kind of thing. It's a slow creep. It shouldn't be allowed. It is bad. It should be fought against. The publishers have to fight against it for their own monetary benefit, but also they're also happen to be the side of truth, and just which is nice. And yeah, it sucks for the librarians. It sucks for people running them. It sucks for the communities where these libraries are serving. It sucks all around. And hopefully we'll live to see it reversed.
Yes, I hope so. I hope kids will be able to pick up whatever books their little hearts desire and let them inform their lives.
Just, it is funny to think of, like, one of the reports was like a small town library that, you know, had the choice between like, okay, go through, just guess at which books we might find offensive and toss them out, or just designate yourself. And they weren't big enough to have like an adults only section. Yeah. So they had just, okay, so we're an adults only library now, Daniel. So this means that this like small town library, a few rooms, you're being like carded at the door, like you're going into a bar, like ID. Oh, you're under 21. You can't go into the library to seek out like a reference book for your book report, stuff like that, for your science project. It's a really comical, crazy effect. That's the kind of thing you'll get when you have these bonkers, stupid policies. But I do love the idea of like a library maybe becoming like a really cool space, like teenagers at the high school being like, you know what you got to do? I got a fake ID so I can sneak into the local library and read Shel Silverstein.
What if this leads to a resurgence, like a new wave of reading, because these states are telling the kids they can't have it. So it is like in our youth, they had the fake IDs to buy beer for whoever. And in this, in this day and age, they have it to, I can get you that book from the adults only library. And it's like, you know, a Game of Thrones,
like a homeless guy. They like, hey buddy, can you go to the library and get us some book? Stephen King? Yeah.
It's crazy. And yeah, you know, Stephen King, that's another good example. Like, I started reading Michael Crichton when I was much younger. So it is another one of these, man, I can't imagine what life would have been like without that formative experience that we are actively trying to, or some states, some policymakers are actively trying to rob kids of. So yeah.
This isn't a politics podcast, but things are going to get pretty wild over the next 4 years, man. We're going to see some stuff. I'm sure we'll touch on it.
Yeah, totally. We're not trying to get political, but when the politics happens to touch Game of Thrones, it's a good excuse for us to talk about it. And in this instance, it does on a few different fronts. But anyway, do you have anything else you want to add to this before we drop one last bit of fun Game of Thrones news to chase all this down with?
No, hit me.
Okay, so this past week, Brandon Sanderson, very prolific fantasy author, wrote Mistborn, the Stormlight Archive, tons of books. He was the author who was chosen to finish The Wheel of Time after Robert Jordan died in 2007. And Sanderson did an interview with Tim Ferriss, who is the guy who wrote The 4-Hour Work Week. He's like an entrepreneur and thinker guy who gets people to rethink productivity and stuff like that. So he interviewed Sanderson. It's like a 3-hour interview. It is a mega interview. It's totally worth a watch for fans of Sanderson's work. Cool. But Sanderson revealed an interesting thing there that I wanted to shout out here, which is that George R.R. Martin was almost chosen to finish The Wheel of Time because he and Robert Jordan were friends. Martin was a fantasy author, and Martin was like the other big name in contention. It was either Martin or Sanderson, and they went with Sanderson. What do you think, Dan? Did we dodge a bullet?
I mean, I think all the cracks are correct. They probably would still be working on the books.
Sure. Yeah, I agree with that. Sanderson was still it was cool to hear him talk about this because, in his words, his publisher still, quote, thought he might be a failure as a writer when this all started happening, because he had just released Mistborn, which was his second adult fantasy book, and it wasn't doing very well. The first Mistborn book, he said that he thinks the cover had a lot to do with it. That first Mistborn cover really didn't land with audiences until they rebranded it with a new cover. So yeah, it is funny to think about an alternate universe where George R.R. Martin might have finished The Wheel of Time instead of Sanderson. I think we can all agree it's better to have an end to these books.
I mean, it made sense because he was a prominent author. He was friends with Robert Jordan, but yes, it would have been the wrong choice.
Yeah, totally. You know, he was already late on his own book series. So in Sanderson's words, like, he was already late at that point. Publishing would not have abided by him taking on this other massive unfinished series. And that was a huge part of why they just knew they couldn't get George for it in the first place. So they ended up going with Sanderson because he wrote this really nice eulogy for Robert Jordan that happened to get across Jordan's editor slash wife's desk and caught her attention.
Yeah, and cool for him. I mean, to go from like a pretty obscure, you know, up and coming fantasy writer to the guy who finishes one of the biggest series to ever come out, quite the second act for Brandon Sanderson. A very cool transition.
Absolutely.
Worthy of, I'd say, like, who would play him in the biopic, but the biopic is him just like a writer's biopic, them at a computer just typing away.
Especially that writer's biopic, because I feel like Sanderson's pretty transparent about like his very, you know, specific wholesome schedule where he wakes up at noon and he writes for a few hours and then he's with his family and then he writes in the middle of the night. So it wouldn't be as exciting as, you know, like, I don't know who else.
Is there a good writer biopic that you can think of? Is there like anybody out there? Any like great writer biopic?
You mean one that exists or yes, one that we would want to see? Was that Tolkien one any good? I didn't watch it.
There was a Tolkien one. I mean, it came
recently,
and went
too.
Yeah, with Nicholas Holt, I think, as Tolkien. It came and went really fast. I don't think anybody really sat down to love it. Oh, I saw the one about the lady who wrote Mary Poppins, where Tom Hanks played Walt Disney. That was okay.
Okay. That's a fun sell of that. I did not know that was a thing, but now I am intrigued for Disney Hanks. So that's the deal with the Brandon Sanderson thing. If you are interested about that, I would definitely recommend watching that interview with Tim Ferriss. Really good stuff. And that is a good little transition here, because we do still have something else to talk about in this show. We've rambled a lot about A Game of Thrones. But The Wheel of Time, speaking of, Amazon released new posters today for season 3, which is coming out on March 13th. You want to look at some, Dan?
Yeah, why not?
All right.
Let's do it.
So who's in this first one? Tell us what we're looking at.
This is Swan Sanche, the Ammerlin seat of the White Tower, and she is dissolving at the edges. Mostly what I like about these posters is they release like 8 of them, and they're all of supporting characters. And you just kind of step back and realize, like, this show has a very deep bench. These character posters are all of supporting characters. I mean, they're like,
how dare you call them Nynaeve?
sorry. Supporting characters and Nynaeve. And they still warrant this stuff. I like how big this world has gotten.
Yeah,
like Swan Sanche is the leader of the Aes Sedai sorceresses, and they all look great in their elaborate fantasy costumes.
Yeah, totally. That's a really good point. Like, the cast is sprawling and it feels natural. It's not like the Rings of Power, like, not to shade another fantasy show, but one thing that kind of always struck me with that was it feels like they thought they needed a lot of characters out of the gate.
Yeah,
so they made up a ton so they could have a big sprawling cast. The Wheel of Time is almost kind of the opposite, where it feels very warranted for where the story's going. Obviously, they're still cutting lots of characters.
Oh, yeah. They're cutting back.
They're cutting back. I saw Sarah Nakamura, who is the book expert for the Wheel of Time production, talking in, I think it was the Dusty Wheel chat, about how they had ended up cutting out one of the wise ones for the Aiel, just because it became a business, you know, numbers on cheats type of thing of they couldn't make it work to have that one extra character. So they had to combine. Sure. But they're still hoping to bring the other one in later, which sometimes they have to make these sorts of concessions. But yeah, so this is Suwan. The next one that I am stoked for, this is Elida. I'm not going to attempt to say her full name because I don't have it in front of me, and I would just embarrass myself. But she is played by the Expanse veteran Shorey Agdashloo, who played Christian Avasarala on the Expanse. This is going to be one of the new standout performers of this season, I have no doubt. Elida is a red Aja, so think the same Aja as like Leandrin. Evil. Yeah, evil, but maybe not explicitly evil. The red Aja is so interesting because they are very gray characters. They are they come off as evil, but the ones who aren't sworn to the dark, like Leandrin, still think they're doing the right thing.
I know.
So it can make some really interesting dynamics, and Elaida is at the center a lot of these really interesting dynamics. She's going to be a standout character this season, and it's worth noting all of the posters. We don't have all six of them, but you can find them on the Wheel of Time Twitter account or wherever.
I wonder what is coming.com or .net
or there, that site that also writes about the Wheel of Time very, very often. But all of the posters released today are White Tower characters. And we are going to see a pretty big shakeup there this season. Book readers who've read The Shadow Rising will know exactly what that is. If you haven't read The Shadow Rising, strap in for a pretty wild ride at the White Tower this season.
Bubos thinks they look like AI-generated fan art. It is getting a little hard to distinguish, I'll admit. I don't think so, though. I mean, they're clearly doctored. But that's Shohei Agudashloo.
Yeah,
I mean, dissolving at the edges,
dissolving in real life.
Oh, she's not. Oh,
not
she
in
is.
Real Sorry. Life.
That's the thing. They're on like a tomorrow. Everything will dissolve.
Yes,
they're doing a little artistic thing, and not really entirely sure what the point is. But I don't think so. But I do think it's getting harder to tell, which will be a fun future for us. Things are gonna get weird. Yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, I felt that way. Not that it was AI generated, but that there was some kind of uncanny valley with the last poster that had like the whole cast with the columns of Ruidian, that place we debate over the pronunciation of the name for, that had the whole cast there. There was something about that one that looked a little off, a little not AI generated, but something didn't sit right on my eyes. This, I imagine they did photo shoots for these actors, for these posters, and then they just tweaked them somehow. But yeah, so let's talk about our next one, because this is an interesting one. So this is Verin Mathwin, who is a sister of the Brown Aja. Think of them as the librarians of the Aes Sedai, who would not want any books censored. So Verin is a very interesting character in the books. And she goes to the Two Rivers during the Shadow Rising. So she's part of Perrin's whole arc there, which, if I remember right, is kind of how she's introduced. Do you think
she was definitely in the last season? I don't recall if she was introduced earlier in the books.
Yeah, no, she was introduced right at the start of season two. But I think, yeah, I can't remember for sure if season three, it might have introduced her earlier, because we had two whole books of White Tower stuff, you know, versus what we're getting in the show, which is they kind of combined elements of those two books for last season. But do you think they're going to keep Verin at the White Tower this season, Dan?
I don't know.
Yeah,
that's my answer.
That's fair. The trailer had, yeah, we'll see. The trailer, which you can find our breakdown for at the site, showed Alana at the Two Rivers, which Alana is the Green Aja sister. She's been on the show for a while now, but it has not shown Verin. And now we're getting this picture of Verin at the White Tower in this kind of salvo of White Tower posters. So I do kind of think they might keep her there. And I don't know what that might entail for the characters who stay there, but I'm very intrigued. You want to move on to our next one? You have anything to say for Verin here?
The notion of like an entire Aja just filled with spacey, nutty professor librarians is a little funny, but more power to you. I liked her in the second season. I thought she popped in a few scenes.
Yeah, they do important work. And yes, I liked, I don't know the name of the actress who plays Verin, but I liked her too, a lot. And let's look at our last one here. So like I said, there are two more. We don't have the posters for Nynaeve or Elaine here. Go look at them on winterscoming.net. But this one, you had an interesting observation about this one, Dan. So this is Min Farshaw, played by Kay Alexander. You had a theory about the dissolving effect here that related to Min. What's the deal with that?
Yeah, all the posters have, they're dissolving around the edge, which seems like a very, I don't know, curious, specific way to go. And the tagline is, what is it like tomorrow? The world will dissolve. And I was like, dissolve? Is that a code word for the Wheel of Time that I don't know about? Some kind of lore thing? My guess is there's a big shake up at the White Tower, like you said, which could refer to that. I remember a bit in The Shadow Rising where Min is walking through the White Tower early in the book, and her little funky powers that she foresees the future in weird, hard to interpret flashes. And she sees like death birds hanging out on everyone's head. They're going to be involved in the big coup thing that happens. And she doesn't know what that means. She's just like, everyone around here has incredibly bad juju. And I'm going to maybe the dissolve things to take on that.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think that's as likely a guess as any. I do think, regardless of what the effect is, I do think that that is what that little tagline about tomorrow, the world will dissolve or whatever. I do think that's
going to be a new trailer or something tomorrow. What's tomorrow?
That is a good question. So it is Wednesday. The Wheel of Time does new press drops on Wednesday. So that's today. So it'd be kind of nuts if they were like surprised. Have a thing on Thursday as well, loyal fans. So my other thought with this dissolving thing is we have seen a few effects in trailers of people dissolving, like Egwene in one scene. I wondered if it related to the dream world, Tel'Arin, Riod. But at the same time, I think you're totally on point about the dissolving being, you know, related to the White Tower, because no matter how you look at it, the White Tower is going to be a very different place by the end of season three than it is at the start. Like, we can kind of say that conclusively. There's zero chance that the White Tower will be exactly the same by the end of this season. Stuff is gonna go down. Should be fun. And yes, Valerie, she does look happy with her pockets. Min loves a good pair of pants, as most book readers know. But yeah, so The Wheel of Time, season three, coming March 13th. Keep an eye out on Wednesdays if you're into this show, because like I said, that is the day that they typically drop new stuff and stoke the fires of hype. All right, Dan, shall we head into that portion of the show where we just talk about what else we're watching, reading, experiencing in this mortal coil?
Yeah, we should. I'm not really doing it for anything. I watched the first episode of Mystic Quest because you were talking good about it.
Nice. How'd you like it?
It was nice. I liked it. Yeah, it was cute. I'll keep watching. I don't think I laughed uproariously, but I do like the idea of a show that mines. I mean, major tech companies are such an important part of our lives nowadays. I want to see satire about that. I want to see satire about billionaires. I want to see satire about the people who are really making these kind of calls. Speaking of calls. So yeah, I like the idea. I thought it was cute. I like the cast, and I'll keep it up.
Nice. Yeah, that is my landline, which is just out of reach. It's not the billionaire
landline. That's so cool.
I live in the forest. It's true. I need one because we don't get good service here.
That's right.
But it is, so maybe that's the billionaires calling to let me know they heard our podcast. They are upset at the idea of being parodied. But yeah, no, that is. So I liked Mythic Quest. We're on season 4, I think, is the new one that just came out. And
yep, that's the newest.
It does have ups and downs. Like, I will say, it is not just an uproarious laugh fest the whole way through. There are some points where the show is a little more funny, a little less funny, a few spots where it's like, oh, y'all got poignant here for a week. Okay. Like, there's one episode that made me tear up. They had probably the realest pandemic episode of any show seen. That they actually filmed during the pandemic, like entirely over Zoom. They filmed a whole episode of television. It was super creative. The story behind the episode is really interesting. But yeah, I am curious to hear what you think as you watch it more, because I've been enjoying that show quite a lot.
Did you ever watch Silicon Valley on HBO? That's kind of the HBO version of Mythic Quest, the kind of Silicon Valley satire. But HBO style, so more profanity, harder core. And I thought really, really good. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Gave us Kumail Nanjiani. Him to us.
Yes, it did. So I have seen episodes of Silicon Valley, but I never like sat down and watched it all the way through. But I always enjoyed when I did watch it.
It was fun.
Are you watching anything else?
Not really. I'm waiting on... Okay, I found out that we're going to get Severance screeners like the week that the episode drops now, which I'm fine. Thank you, Apple. Okay. Sorry. Thank you. Oh, Apple, I love you. Please give me seven screeners. That's about it.
Fair. Well, I'm also watching Severance, enjoying it a lot. I like the last episode more than Woe's Hollow, which we talked about last week. The pacing for Woe's Hollow was just a little weird. I do think they retroactively made my angst about Mark's reintegration. There we go. They made me retroactively less mad about that by kind of explaining that it's a gradual process, stuff like that. Yeah. So it's not just like a switch flipped. So I did like this episode more. I'm excited for the next one. The next
one's hot. I will tell you, I've seen this one Friday. I think it's my favorite of the season so far. I like it a lot.
Okay. The hype is real. The other show that I'm watching is Pantheon, which is an animated show it was an AMC show. It's now on Netflix. And the thing that caught me about Pantheon is that it is based on a short story by Ken Liu, who is the guy who wrote the Dandelion Dynasty. He's a really kind of well-loved fantasy author. It's a sci-fi show where this high school girl finds out her father's consciousness was uploaded onto the net, basically. So he starts getting in touch with her, and then it's this whole conspiracy about this company that is trying to do uploaded consciousness and all the very ethically bad stuff they do in pursuit of that. It's really good. It's a really, really good show. I'm almost done with the first season. It's one of those shows where I'm like, if this was, and I hate to say this because animated shows are amazing in their own right, but I think if this was a live action show, which it feels like it could have been, it's different than like Arcane, where it's like, y'all needed to make this animated. Like, it wouldn't have worked in live action. This, it's like, I can almost picture what it would have been like in live action. I think it probably would have been a much bigger hit, honestly, because it's really adult leaning cerebral stuff that is just, it's a good show. I'm enjoying it a lot.
Cool. I like it. Julie's watching Vampire Diaries, classic, and we're going to watch 1923 next episode, showing the Taylorverse, Taylor Sheridan verse coming up in a couple days.
Nice.
My lady watching Chosen, which I'm not sure about. I got to watch From. Everyone's still recommending that to me. And tonight, I'll hopefully watch The White Lotus. I've been behind on that a bit. But it's back. Another HBO show to gather around and watch as a species.
Yeah, around the campfire, gather to watch The White Lotus. That's cool. I enjoyed The White Lotus, what I've seen of it so far, which is most of the first two seasons, so I will definitely be checking that out. The main other thing I'm into at the moment is I'm still reading Grave Empire by Richard Swan, which is like a kind of a almost a flintlock fantasy. It's set during a Napoleonic War type era, and that has been really good. I'm hoping to finish that this week. So,
very cool. And that's about what we're watching. Daniel, should we bring this puppy home?
I think we shall, Dan. I think we shall. With the world famous, historically renowned WIC News Lightning Round, where we go through all of the news stories we did not have time to get to in the main show in 20 seconds, or we are buzzed into infamy and shame by producer Richard. Dan, are you prepared to dive right into this?
Yes, I am.
Some stories?
Wait. Okay, let's go.
Nice. All right. I don't think we put this in any particular order. I know I didn't. So, Dan, you like John Lithgow. Why don't you talk about this first one? Apparently, John Lithgow, the Trinity Killer from Dexter, he's in final negotiations to play Dumbledore in the new Harry Potter show.
Julie, nice burn. That was a nice intro, Daniel. Mostly. Okay. John Lithgow, American actor, Third Rock from the Sun, The Crown, playing Albus Dumbledore and Harry Potter show. Take that, British people. You're coming over here, taking all our roles for decades. We're going to strike back. We're going to get an American guy playing a British icon, and we're going to eat your lunch.
That's what I'm hearing on that. What I'm hearing is this is a direct retaliation for Oppenheimer, which was all British actors except for Robert Downey Jr.
Oh, for Tom Holland stealing Spider-Man, for Henry Cavill stealing Superman, we're coming for you, Brits.
Nice. All right, what's next?
The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power, has been renewed for season 3.
Nice. Yes. Yeah, it is official. Rings of Power is coming back. They've announced 3 directors who will be directing it. So it's Sana Hamri, Charlotte Brandstrom, both of whom were in the last season, and then a third one who I don't remember, who's new. And yeah, they're already in pre-production on it, so probably start filming relatively soon. I would guess 2026 we'll be watching that show. All right. Here's one. Sorry to the Sarah J. Maas fans. Hulu was making a Court of Thorns and Roses television series, and they decided to scrap it, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's a shame. It would have been Hulu's first big fantasy show. Sarah J. Maas is a popular author. Those books are popular. It makes you think, like, what do you got to do to get an original show, like, adapted off the ground? It's hard. I heard that the Outlander guy, Matthew Roberts, I think his name was.
Well, Ronald D. Moore.
Sorry. Very different. that could have been it. But yeah, it's not happening, which is a shame. Daniel, here's Matt Damon as Odysseus in Christopher Nolan's adaptation of The Odyssey. Here he is in a big, fun push broom, ye old timey Greek. You find this funny?
I don't know why I can't stop laughing at the thought of Matt Damon as Odysseus. But yeah, so this is, speaking of Christopher Nolan, this is his next thing he's making, The Odyssey, with Matt Damon as stranded seafaring man Odysseus. I will watch it. I'm sure it will be good. Nolan has like a group of actors he likes working with, and Matt Damon is among them. But I don't know why it still cracks me up. All right. Here's a fun rumor that I like. I think I like this rumor. The rumor, as rumored by the internet, and I think Daniel RPK, is that Gareth Edwards, the director of The Creator, may replace Denis Villeneuve to direct Dune Part 4.
Yeah, I like this too. Gareth Edwards, Rogue One, The Creator. A guy who seems to like sci-fi movies and is good at making them. We know they're not going to stop the Dune movies with Dune Part 3, with or without Denis Villeneuve. They're going to keep making them. So if they're going to do it, they might as well hire somebody who's good at this kind of stuff. And yeah. Gareth Edwards is good at this kind of stuff. And also, I want to see the next Dune book after Messiah. It's a good book. I'd watch it on screen. So yeah, I'm all for that.
Me too.
Here's another fun rumor, as long as we're into rumors. Rumor was going around that Nkuti Gatwa, the current Doctor Who, might be quitting after this upcoming new season.
Yeah, so the rumor is that he's got Hollywood roles waiting for him. He's thinking about relocating. He's gotten a lot of hate and doesn't know if that's worth it. I don't know how substantial this is. I know that when the rumor came out, I believe it's the BBC pushed back on this, basically saying the episodes haven't been received as well as they'd hoped, but they still have a bunch more to go in their current contract with Mickey Mouse. So we'll see. That was well over 20 seconds.
We're doing bad today.
I'm sorry.
We're doing bad.
Okay.
We're failing.
Please accept this heartfelt apology, and we'll move on to the next news story, which is that Jeremy Strong will star in a remake of The Boys from Brazil. Dan, what's that?
The Boys from Brazil is a movie from, I think, the 80s about what if Hitler was, because a lot of Nazis traveled to South America after the fall of the Third Reich. Mm-hmm. And the movie was about, like, what if they cloned Hitler while they were there? It was part of a whole plot. And I'm not sure if Jeremy Strong is playing the scientist or is playing one of the Hitler clones. Either way, I'm kind of in. And I'll leave it at that, because we've been sucking at this 20-second thing so far.
I'm impressed you did that in 20 seconds.
Do you have more to say on Hitler?
No.
Okay, fine. finally, Jack Quaid, star of The Boys, has shared this photo from behind the scenes of the 5th and final season of himself, covered in blood, the big old thumbs up sign.
Yep. The Boys is filming its 5th and final season. This had the caption, "Work's been going great, you guys." sounds like The Boys, they're having a good time as they do. And yeah, I can't wait to see how Huey ended up in this state. It should be a good time. I imagine that will be 2026 as well, that we'll get to watch that.
the person who wrote our reviews for the last season of The Boys, season four, had like a counter for every episode of whether Huey gets covered in blood or not. Then it happens like a surprising amount if you go and count. It's a tradition at this point. So I would be sad if it didn't happen at least a couple times in the final season.
Yeah, totally. Would it even be The Boys if Huey wasn't getting coated in blood at least once every episode or two? It's true.
But that'll be next year. But you don't have to wait that long to watch more episodes of Take the Black, because we're here every week at 2 p.m. CST on the Winners Coming YouTube page and Facebook page. Also available in podcast form, wherever podcasts are downloadable, be it iTunes, be it Apple Music, YouTube Music, whatever. Wherever you get your podcast, we're there.
Spotify.
So download us. Spotify. Leave us a like, a subscribe, a comment. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell your nurses, tell your doctors. Tell your accountants, your bankers, your lawyers, and the people you pass in the street. Call strangers and tell them about us. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. We'll be here next week. Hope to see you there. Good night. Good luck. And have a pleasant final week of February. Goodbye.
Take care, all.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
Your old or broken phone can let you down, but at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence with a new line on my plan and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. After all, you don't want your old phone to die on you when you're lost.
Perfect.
Or for your broken phone to glitch at the worst possible time.
Hey, can I get your number? Oh.
Trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger. And future stronger you can get started now by saving $28 or more when you join today. You in? We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need to keep stepping it up. And free fitness training to help you mix up your routine. Plus, most clubs are open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends February 28th. See Home Club for details.